Okay, so we're on Daf Chofeyum and Aleph. And we're up to Iboilahu. Let's see if we could all find the place. It's about, I would say, two-thirds the way down. The first word in the word, in the line is Al.
Al-Dat?
Yeah, Al-Dat. So just let me know if you could find it. You know, if you wanted to count lines, you'd probably count 20 lines up from the bottom, maybe 25 lines down from the top. Iboiluhu. So whenever the Gemara has a suffix and vacillates back and forth, you'll find the opening words are always Iboiluhu, which means they ask, they inquire. Baal shemachal kinuyot. So after the husband warned his wife not to seclude herself, now he wants to be mochel. Now the word mechila can be translated in many different ways. Sometimes, for example, if you owe me a debt, I could be mochel the debt. If you wronged me and you owe me, you know, tshuva and kapara and slicha, I could be mochel you. I can just wave the claim I have against you on a moral level. But the word mechila here in this context has a different meaning. And what it means is to invalidate. What I mean is the following. Kinui is something that has halachic significance, like any action that's done, for example, performed in front of two witnesses, and it generates new laws. And we could talk about a whole long list of different actions that generate new laws and new halachic status, and kinui is one of them. So for example, if we go to monetary law, if I borrow money from you, then that creates a monetary chov. I owe you a chov. If a person wrongs somebody, that creates a chov of a different sort, not a monetary chov, but a moral obligation to make amends. Now the question is, can you rescind that action? Do you, since you were the one who created it, do you have the ability to destroy it? It's like God created the world. So if he's the creator of the world, he can destroy the world. Same thing here. The Gemara thinks that if the Baal was the one who created this halachic entity called Kinui, right, and the entire formation and all the dinim of Sota depend upon Kinui, then he created it, he can rescind it, he can invalidate it. That's called Mechila in this context. So, Eino Machul. Or shall we say, once he already created this halachic status because he warned her, and that warning called Kinui was done in front of two witnesses, it has halachic import, it, as we said before, it's the foundation for the entire structure of Sota, he cannot rescind it. He doesn't have the power to nullify, oh, that's a good word, nullify. That's what Mechila here means, nullification. He doesn't have the power of nullification, and the reason for that is because nullification only applies to something that is, shall we say, emotional or moral, but something that's legal. Once the legal transaction has been already formulated, he cannot negate it. So, for example, if I sell you my field, do I have a right to negate that sale? If a man marries a woman, does he have right to negate that marriage? And the answer is no. Why? Because his action was halachically powerful, and it generated a change of status. So that's already out of your hands. But on the other hand, the Gemara thinks, well, you were the one who created this kinu. You should have rights to pull it back, to nullify it. Mi amrinon, should we say the kinu de baal tola rachmana? The Torah makes kinu depend upon the baal. He's the husband. He was the one who created this kinui. Now the kinui and its status totally depends upon him. And at the moment he wants to nullify it, the kinui is gone. And Ubal HaMachal El Kinuyav, he now nullified his kinu. O Dilma, or perhaps we should say Kavan, since the Kanile Meikara, he made the kinu from the beginning. And once the kinu was chal means it was already valid, it was binding. Lo matzi machale, he doesn't have control over the mechila. You know, you might create something, but once you've created, you've sort of, you know, you pushed the snowball off the top of the mountain, and now it's out of your control. You have no way of pulling it back. Because it's a legally binding transaction, and this kinui now is binding, and you don't have control over it. You know, it's like you shoot an arrow. You know, once you shoot the arrow, you can't retract the arrow. It's got a life of its own. Toshma, let's take a proof from our Mishnah. Now, this Toshma that we're about to learn should remind you of that which we studied on Thursday. And it says the following, the Elu and the following categories, we have three categories, Shebezdin Mekanim Lahem, that the Bezdin will stand up and replace the husband who's incapable, and they're going to initiate the Kinui as an agent or a substitute for the Baal, for the husband himself. Number one is Mishan Ischarish Bala. He became a deaf mute. O Nishtate, who became a Shote. O Shaya Chavush Bebeis Asurim. He's incarcerated in jail. And if Bezdin, it comes to the knowledge of Bezdin, they become aware of the fact that she's misbehaving and she's hanging around with some other man in the absence of her husband. Then Bezdin will stand up to the plate and they will offer a kinui as if they're replacing his kinui. Well, wait a second, that's not fair. Iyamir is going to tell me that Baal Shemachal kinuyav machul, that when a husband negates his kinui, he can absolutely undermine and negate the kinui. Is Avdina Mivdi, we should go ahead and do something. The Asi Baal Machile? So Rashi has a particular take on this Gemara, which I'll explain to you in a minute. But before we get to Rashi, let's just translate the Gemara the way we would understand the Gemara. If you remember, we had a discussion earlier about whether Bezdin would do something on behalf of someone, and that person has something to lose. What do I mean he has something to lose? Normally we say that Bezdin will operate on someone's behalf for his benefit. But we would never suggest that Bezdin should, you know, the courts should operate on behalf of someone to his detriment. And here, since the kinui, if you hold that Baal Shemachal kinui of kinui machal, means the husband has rights to negate the kinui, then if Bezdin does the kinui, they're really working against the interest of the Baal. Because if the Baal was only here, you know, if we could only somehow extract a response from him, it's very likely that he would say, I'll overlook this kinui. I don't want to ruin my marriage totally. I want to completely null and nullify my kinui. And now we're going to go ahead and set up a kinui? How do we know what the Baal would be thinking if he was here? That's the way we would interpret this Gemara. Rashi has a different understanding of this Gemara. So if you want to take a look at Rashi, the Rashi is Dibra Maskil Avdinon. So you may find this, it's approximately 15 lines up from the bottom of the page. Rashi says, Avdinon midi di osi bal umachile. He says, Viika zilusa de Medina. So let's take a minute or two to discuss a concept in halacha which is called zilusa de Medina. Now, there's a similar concept in Western law, but we shouldn't equate it, which is called contempt of court. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason for that concept is that it's very crucial. This is something that in contemporary life here in the state of Israel, we're going through real labor pains over here, but it's very crucial that the judiciary commands the respect of the people. People have to look up to the judges. And zilusa is the exact opposite. Zilusa, bilashon zilzul, is when we lose respect for the judges. Now, if Beis Din makes too many errors, then the esteem for Beis Din is going to diminish, is going to go down, down, down. And here's a case where Beis Din might make a real mistake. Why? Let's take the case of Hoya Chavush B'Beis Asurim. Right now he's locked in jail. As a result, we went ahead, Beis Din went ahead, and they gave kinui to his wife in his absence. Now he gets out of jail. Miracle of miracles. They pardon him. You know, the president gives him clemency. I don't know what exactly happened. Or maybe he lived out his entire term of incarceration. So he comes out of jail, and he finds out that Beis Din gave her kinui. So immediately he says, I want to rescind that kinui. I mean, Beis Din looks like a bunch of jokers, if you know what I'm saying. This is really embarrassing to Beis Din, because they instituted a kinui, and he comes along, and he laughs it off. And he says, I don't want this kinui, I want to negate this kinui. So why would Beis Din expose themselves, you know, they're very vulnerable here, to a loss of respect, because if he comes by, as we said before, and he exercises his rights to negate the kinui, then he's basically laughing at Beis Din, and he's undermining everything that Beis Din did. We don't want to expose ourselves to such a danger. The answer is that even if he comes along and he gets out of the jail, he doesn't have the right to rescind his kinui. And the Gemara rejects it. No. Stama, demilsa. Stama means that, generally speaking, if we don't know otherwise, demilsa of the thing. Adam maskim al das Beis Din. A person agrees to the decision of Beis Din. He's gonna subjugate himself to the decision of the court, and he thinks that he, you know, the court knows better than he does, and if the court instituted this kinui, They made a weighty, you know, decision. They looked into it. They saw the way she was behaving, and he's going to accept the decision of Beis Din. He's not going to try to undermine Beis Din. So in truth, he could undermine Beis Din, and he could negate the kinui of Beis Din, but he's not going to do so.
There could be a situation here where I would think that the Beis Din has the opportunity to communicate with the husband, even though he's in jail. They can communicate with him and find out what his mindset is.
Not in those
Why
days.
Why wouldn't they do that?
In those days, it was impossible to, you know, you're thinking of the courts today. We live in an advanced, you know, sophisticated Western society where people in jail have more rights than people out of jail. But it wasn't like that in the old days. In the old days, basically, you went to jail and you're lucky if they let your body out for burial after you died in jail. You know what I'm saying? So there was no possibility of communicating with him. And now Beis Din has to make a decision. Should we expose ourselves to the possibility that if he gets out of Beis Din, he's going to undermine our decision. He's going to have a mind of his own. He'll decide, no, I don't care about this kid. She's misbehaving, but I can tolerate that. I can live with that. And that would expose Beis Din to what Rashi calls zilusa de Beis Din. And the Gemara says, no. Yeah, you're 100% right. He could rescind and negate the kinui and undermine the decision of Beis Din and the action of Beis Din, but we're not worried about such a thing. The chances of that happening are very slim, although possible, because we can assume that every Jewish man will kowtow, so to speak. He will accept, you know, with humility the decision of the court, and he will realize that if Beis Din, you know, weighed all the evidence but back and forth and they decide that this woman needs a serious warning, a kinui, he will accept that decision of Beis Din. Toshma, now we have another proof from a different Mishnah. And this Mishnah we've touched upon back on Daf Zion. I was actually here when we discussed this. I mean, I don't know much of what you discussed, but this one I remember. And that is that we have to be very careful that the husband does not have a relationship with his wife on the way up to the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
In fact, if he does so, then he undermines the entire parish of Memororim.
Right.
And in order to make sure that the husband doesn't fall prey to his evil inclination, you know, to his desire, and succumb to that Yetzirah, Mosrim lo shnei talmidei chachamim. What we do is we send an accompaniment, a livui, so to speak, of two talmidei chachamim. Why? Shemiyavo leo baderech. Now, let's try to think exactly what's the purpose, what is the role of these two scholars? I'll give you a couple of different possibilities. One possibility is that he'll be inhibited to have a relationship in their presence. So they sort of change the ambiance. You know, they're all in the same, train car, you know what I'm saying? So he's not going to play around. The other possibility is that the Talmidei Chachamim will teach him something. They have something to teach him based on their knowledge. And the Gemara thinks that it's the second way we should go. If it's the first way, that they're just simply there to inhibit him or to testify if he does succumb to his temptation and have this relationship, if that be the case, we didn't have to send Torah scholars. The fact that we sent Talmidei Chachamim and chose them for this job must mean that they have something to teach him. So the Gemara asks the following. If we're going to assume that the husband has control to negate and undermine his kinui, is lechale lekinui velivlo? Why are we sending Talmidei Chachamim to inhibit him? Why don't we assume that if he has this, you know, this intense desire, let him go ahead and have this relationship with her? And then afterwards, he wants to continue this marriage relationship with her, so he'll be mochel on his kinu. You know, he'll lechale means mochel in a different form in Aramaic. It means he will forgive. Negate his warning. You know, yeah, like you say, forgive and forget, right? Because he's having this relationship. Why should we be concerned about this whole possibility that the Baal might do something to, you know, to destroy or freeze the process of Sota, when the Baal himself, with a snap of his finger, could freeze the process of Sota by just negating his kinut? He could rescind his kinut. So it would seem that what the role of Talmidei Chachamim is something beyond what we think it is. It's a notification to the Baal that, you know, he should not have this relationship, this intimacy with her. Shnei Talmidei Chachamim. And why are we telling this to Gemiri? Because they will teach him, because they themselves know, they're scholars, the Iboy Mitlemival, if he gets the desire, you know, to have this Be'ilu with her, Amri Le, they'll teach him, Achle Lekinuyech Ubala. First, you should rescind your Kinui, and then you could have Be'ilu. Now, in order to appreciate this, we have to understand that the Baal is not allowed to have a relationship with his wife after she became a Sota, because once she violates the Kinui, that's called Stira, at that moment in time, the Torah says he's not allowed to have a relationship with her. Again, we'll see a little bit later, if you hang in for another 5 minutes, how he derived this conclusion. Let me just I don't want to lose my trend, because I'll be totally lost if I lose my trend. Sorry, there's a mathematics here that I have to figure out. So let's get through the mathematics, and then you'll ask all your questions. So what's the mathematics? The mathematics is the following. That a person who gave kinui to his wife, and then she secluded herself with that man, which is called Stira, and she violated the kinui. At that point, he's not allowed to have a relationship with her. Again, we're going to derive this in a minute from a Yalfusa, from a Pasuk. And therefore, we need Talmidei Chachamim to accompany him and prevent him from having this relationship. And why Talmidei Chachamim? Because they understand the law, and they know that after the Stira, once she secluded herself with this man, he can no longer have a relationship with her. And if he does, he violates a law, a losas in the Torah, and we need the Talmidei Chachamim to accompany the Baal and tell him this. Now, the Gemara says the following. If we assume, again, I'm trying to work out the mathematics here, let's assume that the Baal could be mochel on his kinu, right? He can negate his kinu. So if that be the case, then I need Talmidei Chachamim who know the following two halachas to teach these halachas to him in a case where his desire has overwhelmed him and he wants to cohabitate with his wife, right? So number one, what the Chachamim will tell him is that he's not allowed to have this relationship. But number two, what they'll tell him is that if he will have this relationship, then what he first should do is he should be mochel on his kinui. Do you hear what the Talmid Chacham are going to tell him? Because now the Gemara is trying to prove from the fact that his escort is made up of two Talmid Chachamim is that their role, their job is to prevent him from violating this lav. And how could they do so? By telling him, my friend, before you go ahead and have this relationship, be mochel on your kinu. So the Gemara's logic is the following. If he cannot be mochel on his kinu, if he cannot be mochel on his kinu, let me just get the logic here, just 1 second. E amrit baal shem mochel kinu, then what? Then lechaile lekine velivol. So if we hold that the Baal has the what? He has the legal rights to negate his kinui. Then once he negates his kinui, she's no longer what? She's no longer sota, right? The beginning of sota, the first the foundation of sota is what? Is kinui. I mean, if there's no kinui, there's no sota, right? Everything has to begin with what? With kinui. And now he could undermine the kinui and negate the kinui. In which case, he will not violate the isur, the prohibition of having a relationship with her. So now we can begin to understand why we're going to send two Talmidei Chachamim. The Gemire. Gemire means that these are learned people. And if they see that the husband is getting carried away over here, Amrile, they should say to him, Achle lekinuyech ubala. You should cancel and negate your warning, and then you're allowed to have beer with her.
I think there's something that has to do with the two Talmidei Chachamim. Why? Why do you need two? One Talmud Chacham do the same thing that two can do. So I think there's something else that's going on here. These are Edim.
Right.
They have another role here.
Right, but why do we need Talmidei Chachamim? That's the question. If the need is for witnesses, which
because
I agree
with. More believable in the court.
No, there's no such halacha. Chas v'shalom. Heaven forbid. The halacha does not accept the testimony of Talmidei Chachamim even one inch more than the greatest ignoramus in Jewish law.
Okay.
So there's no such thing as requiring Talmidei Chachamim for Eidus. We never require Talmidei Chachamim for Eidus. Your knowledge and your scholarship is wonderful, but it has nothing to do with testimony.
My question.
So the Gemara is aware of the fact that there's some sort of education process here, that we need the Talmidei Chachamim to teach him something. What is the Talmidei Chachamim, or these two Talmidei Chachamim, what are they teaching him? And the Gemara says that if we hold that Baal Shemachal Kinuyev Machal, then it makes sense that when they're escorting him and there's a fear that he might get overwhelmed by his desire to have a relationship with her, which means he's going to violate a law in the Torah, the Talmidei Chachamim are going to tell him, okay, we're going to let you do this, but make sure you don't violate the law. How could they do such a thing?
You don't even need a Talmid Chacham to do that.
Yes, you do. Because even the Gemara itself doesn't know whether he could be mochel on his kinui. It's only after the Gemara finally comes to the conclusion, which again, you have to be all you gentlemen are Talmidei Chachamim because you learned Sota Daf Chaf Hei. If you didn't learn Sota Daf Chaf Hei, trust me, you would not know that a Baal could negate his kinui. For that, we need a Talmid Chacham to teach you.
We need
two for witnesses, for testimony again.
Okay.
But for that, we don't need Talmidei Chachamim. We can take two shlubs off the street. Pardon the expression.
But we don't need two to... We need one Talmid Chacham to
teach.
Tell him what is right and wrong here.
Ah, oh, I see what you say. Oh, that's a good point. In other words, why not have one Am Haaretz and one Talmud Chacham?
Whatever.
I see. You know, that's a good question.
Unless there's a concept of Eidos here.
That's a good question. No, for sure there's a concept of Eidos. But again, as I said five times, for Eidos we would not need Talmidei Chachamim. The only reason we need Talmidei Chachamim is to educate him. So now you're asking an excellent question. Why isn't one Talmud Chacham good enough?
Right.
And the other one will be an Amor.
Right.
So that's an excellent question.
Okay.
It took me a little time to understand your question. I wasn't Yorid L'Omek Dvarim. I didn't see the depth of your question.
Okay.
Took me a while. I mean, I helped you along a little bit, if you know what I mean.
Maybe Talmid Chacham would be less tempted to be with a woman.
This I don't know. That's a different question.
I thought we'd already just decided much earlier on that you've got to have two Talmid Chacham because of this during the trip. You know, somebody's going to have to go to the bathroom at some stage. So you always have to have another one left over.
So you're saying maybe the other one left over will be an Amoritz, you're saying. That's not bad. I like that. So you have to make sure, you know, to guarantee that one of them won't drop out for a minute, and then he'll have this relationship. Maybe the one that'll drop out will have to be with Talmud Chacham.
The one that washes the husband.
That's not a bad answer. I like that.
That was in the mission.
So now I owe you twice already. Last time I owed you for, I forgot which word you gave me. Toshma. Okay, so the Gemara,
As I remember, when we were speaking about, when the Gemara was speaking about warning, the Gemara pointed that a valid warning should have two witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Here, there's nothing said about how a man could cancel his warning, the official process.
Does he need two witnesses, is you're asking?
That is pointed out in the Gemara, and here, just say, assuming that two witnesses is a normal process, but it's not pointed as is it pointed.
Right.
My guess is you need a Talmid Chacham, because they need to teach him.
It's a gentleman.
The sanctity.
Let me know when you want to go on in the Gemara. You know, just give me a minute's warning. So after you finish your discussion. Okay. So again, let's just try to get through the sugya as best as we can. And the Gemara says the following. Now I just want to read. Artscroll here has a footnote that seems to have a different. Let me just see footnote number 25 for a split second. If the law is that the warning cannot be revoked, then the couple will be forbidden to cohabit it under any circumstance. In this case, there is no need for consisting of Torah scholars. Mm-hmm. But if the warning can be revoked, then we need Torah scholars who know the law. Therefore, if the husband seeks to cohabitate, they would have the knowledge to tell him to revoke the warning. Hence, by specifying Torah scholars, the mission indicates that the warning is revocable.
Mm-hmm.
However, even this interpretation is not compelling. See above, according to the Mishnah. I don't know exactly what he means, it's not compelling. Toshma, come and learn, and we have now a very important statement of Rav Yosha. This statement of Rav Yosha, by the way, appears elsewhere in Shas because it's relevant to many, many different areas in Shas. So let's just mention a few of them. The concept of Mechila is relevant whenever the halacha is concerned with an insult, so to speak. Mechila means that if somebody or some institution was insulted, then mechila becomes relevant. You know, I want to waive my insult, so to speak, and I'm pacified. So, for example, there's a parasha called Zaken Mamre, and that's a parasha Shoftim, and the Torah says that if a scholar who's a member of the court dissents and he goes back to his local community and he continues as if no decision was made, and he flouts the authority of the Beis Nagodol, let's say, of the High Court of Israel, and he goes back to his hometown and he continues to issue his verdict based on his opinion, that's called what? Zake Mamre, and he's put to death by Chenek. Okay, there's a whole perek in Sanhedrin called Hanichnokin. Now, the Machayev, you know, the reason why Zaki Mamre is put to death is because he insulted the high court. He flagrantly flouts them, and he deliberately rebels against them. So that rebellion against the court is what generates his chiyuv. So the question is now, if the whole parasha of Zaki Mamre is based on the insult, so to speak, that he heaps upon the Beis Din, does Beis Din have the right to be mochel and to give him pardon and say, you know what, we're not insulted, we'll live with you, so to speak, and that would take him off the, you know, take him off the hook. We have another case of an insult in the parasha of Ben Sorer Umore, and there the child flouts his parents, he's rebellious against his parents. Again, there are many, many different preconditions that have to be met, you know, in terms of his age and what exactly he does and how much he eats and how much he drinks and whatever it might be. But since he rebels against his parents, once again, the question of mechila becomes very relevant. And that's another case where a person who was insulted, and as a result that generates the whole chiyuv misa of Ben Sor Mora, could that person, in the case of his parents, they can waive their insult. And the third case is going to be our case of a husband with regard to Sota, that she in a sense insulted the marriage and her husband by secluding herself with that person after the kinui. And once again, Rav Oshia wants to know, can the husband be mochel and say, well, I'm going to overlook this rebellion, so to speak, against me? So Rav Oshia takes upon himself in all these three cases to say that mechila is operative, mechila is halachically valid. And here's the language of the Braisa. And you know, you're familiar with Rav Yoshia, if you might remember from our Mishnah here in the fourth Perek, we spoke about the Mishnah reflects, if you remember, Rav Yonasan, do you remember that? We had a Braisa where Rav Yoshia disagrees with Rav Yonasan about Shomeres Yavam. I hope you haven't forgotten that. Anyway, it's the same Rav Yoshia, just for your own edification. Shlosha Dvarim Sachli, Rav Yoshia records or transmits he gives us a testimony about Ze'ira. Ze'ira was a man from Yerushalayim. The Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma about this fellow named Ze'ira, that he was a very humble person, and the Gemara tells us that he lived during the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. As a result, he decided to wear black as a manifestation of mourning, of grief, of avelus. Now, apparently there was a minhag back in the day after the Churban HaBayis to wear black, but they wore certain, let's say the shoes were white or something, and he wore total black from head to toe. So the Gemara thought that maybe he was going beyond the, you know, this is called Yura, but the Gemara checked him out and he was a big anav, he was really humble and he was sincere, and they let him on. Anyway, Ze'ira was one of the Anshei Yerushalayim, and he told Rav Yoshia three laws. The first law is relevant to us, to Sota. Baal shemochal kinuyav, kinuyav mochal. That if a husband just decides to negate and rescind his warning, that's valid. Because again, it's all about him. It's all about her rebellion against him. V'zakei mamre, sherotzu bezdin limcholo. In the case of this Zaki Mamre, who, you know, by the way, he's called a Zaki because he himself is a member of the court. But nevertheless, he doesn't take the decision of the court and he flouts that decision. You may remember, by the way, that this case actually came up in a major controversy between Rabbi Gamliel, who is the Nasi, and Rabbi Yeshua. Do you remember that? That was about a case of Rosh Chodesh, exactly when Rosh Chodesh is, and Rav Gamliel forced Rabbi Yoshua to show up on Yom Kippur with his makel and tarbino on the day which, according to the calculation of Rabbi Yoshua, was Yom Kippur. And then there's a famous Gemara, may have you heard of it, called Taner Shalach Noi, where there was a machlok stream of Elozo and the Chachomim about whether a certain oven had was contaminated or not. And Rabbi Elozo insisted on rebelling against the Rabbanon. He never accepted their decision. It was a whole terrible thing. That was from Lozman and Hurkus, one of the greatest of all Atanoim. But he was so convinced that he was right, and he invoked a baskol, a heavenly voice, and then they told him, "Ein mashkichim baskol." We don't. It's a whole sugyan bab metzia about this. So anyway, these are all issues about the division and the controversy amongst the judges and the highest court of Israel. In any event, the Zaki Mamre, by going back to his hometown and insisting on implementing his decision, his verdict, what's called a horah, I should write that on the board, horah. So he gave the horah against the horah of Bezdin. He becomes the Zaki Mamre, and he insulted and undermined the Bezdin, says Zeira Mochlin Lo. If Bezdin decides that they want to be Mochel, then they can do so. And their mechila will alleviate him or acquit him of the crime of being a rebellious zaken. And then we have the third case of Ben Sora Umora Sharatsu Aviv Imo Limcholo, and he's the rebellious son, and his parents say they want to give him mechila, they want to pardon him and completely exonerate him from all the laws and the very severe laws as a capital crime of Ben Soramar. They can do so, and their mechila is valid. And, you know, we can make a kal v'chomer here to the case of, let's say, parents in general, for kibud avim, they want to be mochel, or, let's say, a rebbe, you know, there's a chiv kavod that a student has to give kavod to his rebbe, and the rebbe wants to be mochel him in a case where he violated the kavod of his rebbe. But in the case of a melech, of a king, that's already a horse of a different color, because the Gemara is going to establish in Masechta Kiddushin that melech shemochal kvodo ain kvodo mochel. The king does not have the authority to waive his rights to be insulted, so to speak. And the rebellious person will suffer the consequences, despite the fact that the king wants to be mochel. He just doesn't have the authority to be mochel, to rescind his kpeda, because he represents malchus, he represents kingship, and kingship is a holy enterprise. We're going to soon see that there's an opinion with regard to Bezdin in the case of Zaki Mamre that they can't be mochel. Just like in the case of a king, it's not his personal insult that's at stake, but rather he represents the institution of Malchus, the entity of kingship. So too in the case of a Bezdin, and we're talking about the High Court of Israel made up of 71 elders, it's not their own personal insult over here. We're not insulting Reuven, Shimon, or Levi, these judges that sit on the court. It's really undermining the entire enterprise, the entire authority of Bezdin, and therefore they cannot be mochel. And that's going to be Chaveri Shebedorom. Ukshebasi Eitzel Chaveri Shebedorom. I came down south. There was a whole group of Chachomim down south. Maybe they were in the area of Ashdod or Beersheba or Ashkelon. I don't know where. And when I told them this transmission from Ze'ira al Shnaim Hodule, they agreed with two of these rulings with regard to a Baal Shemochal al Kinuyov, and with regard to a parent who was Mochel on a Ben Soramora, that they accepted that Mechil is valid. However, al Zaki Mamre lo Hoduli, in the case of a Zaki Mamre, they could not accept the ruling of Zeira and validate the Mechil of Bezdin, Shelo Yirbu Machlokas Bi Yisrael. Because once you allow the courts to be mochel, then at the end of the day there'll be tremendous disputes, he calls it in English here. I would say machlokes, I don't know, the word dispute I think is just like it understates it. When we're talking about splitting the entire tradition of Israel, do you follow what I mean? The whole Mesorah of Torah Shebaal Peh is at stake, is on the line. The Rambam says at the beginning of Hilchos Mamrim that the authority of Bezdin HaGadol, of the High Court of Israel, is to be Moser Torah, to guarantee the transmission of Torah. As soon as you allow, you know, other Chachamim with their dissenting opinions to go ahead and have free hand and allow them to be Mora Hora, to give decisions against the Hora Spes Nagodol, you've basically undermined the whole institution that's meant to guarantee the Mesoras HaTorah, the transmission of Torah from one generation. Imagine if every single time a person rebels against Beis Din and he decides that he's going to change the halacha, if we're going to allow him to do so because Beis Din's not in the mood to fight the battle or whatever, they have some sort of compassion over him, they don't want to put him to death, then you basically undermine the whole institution that guarantees the Mesoras HaTorah. And that's why today, Rabbosai, as you know better than I do, we don't have a real Mesoras HaTorah. There's so many splits and so many debates and controversies, I can give you 1,000 of them, and it's all based on the fact that we don't have the Beis Din HaGadol. If we had a Beis Din HaGadol today, if we had the High Court of Israel, Judaism would look totally different. We would have a final decision based on the majority of the judges, and that would be Holy of Holies. No one would have the right to dispute such a decision. But Shema Mino, what we do see, both from Ze'iri and from the Chaverim Shebedorom, they both accepted the premise, the position, that Baal Shemachal Kinuyov, Kinuyov Machal. Shema Mino. Now, I think I mentioned to you last time, whenever you see Shema Mino twice, it means that that's the final decision of the Gemara. So, I took a breath over here, and I walked out of here before I read the next Gemara, with the misimpression that the whole Masechta Sota is really very iffy. Because if the Baal could decide that he wants to be Mochel on the Kinui, and we built this entire Masechta, the entire parasha in the Torah Naso, on the predicate that he gave his wife Kinui, and everything that came afterwards, and now the Baal comes along and says, I don't care about the Kinui. You know, it makes the whole Masechta very tenuous. But now we read the next Gemara. Pligi ba Rav Achav Ravina Chad Omar. I'm going to explain this. I just want to read it to you. Chad Omar Kodem Stira Mochul Veliachar Stira Eino Mochul VeChad Omar Liachar Stira Nami Mochul. Now we don't know who holds what. We know there's a debate here between Rav Ach and Ravina. One opinion has it that this whole discussion about Mechila only applies before Stira. And I'll explain why in a minute. You could probably figure it out on your own. The other opinion says, which is a very... Again, I'm happy with it on one end because maybe it'll...
clarify it.
It'll save Jewish marriages, mm-hmm. But I'm not happy about it because it gets me back to the point that I was making before, that the whole proposition of Sota is very iffy, and the Baal with just a flip of his hand can decide that he wants to rescind the Mechila, and this is already after she had Stira. But let's go back to the first opinion. That's the one that appeals to me, and apparently appeals to the Gemara as well. And that is that this whole institution called Mechila is only relevant before Stira. Who could tell me why? Why is it impossible, according to this man, the Omar, that after Stira there could be Mechila?
Say the question.
Why is it impossible? Why is this impossible, the second position, which the Gemara is going to reject, that he could be Mochel after Stira? How does that rub you the wrong way?
Because he's already set up this legal
Say better, David. Say better. I'm going to push you against the wall, if you don't mind. I mean, I'm going to treat you like I treated my 18-year-old students. You know, say better. It's, what happens with Stira, Rabosai?
It could have been a relation.
What?
They have to get a get at a minimum.
Okay, you said it not exactly the way, but you said it the same way I would have said, just with one change. I would have said the following. Because with Stira, she becomes Asura al-Baila. He could never have an intimate relationship with her. Right. That's irrevocable. That's what Stira accomplishes. And David points out that as a result, he has to divorce her. So it's unthinkable that he could undo a Mechila after Stira. I understand before Stira. She didn't violate the Stira, so he gave her a warning. Now he wants to say, forget about the warning, I'm Mochel. That I can understand, and that's the Maskar of the Gemara. But to postulate that the Mechila would work after Stira when she's Asura al-Baila, let's say, for example, for whatever reason, she can't drink from the Mei Merorin. right? Let's say, I don't know, the Baal gets sick and dies or whatever it is, so she can't drink for the Mamararim. But okay, if he dies, my question is irrelevant. But let's say he's alive and well, but he's not well enough, you know, to bring her up for the process of drinking. Or I can give you a whole bunch of cases where she doesn't drink. She still has to roll Baila. And the Mishnah goes on and says that she loses her ksuba because of stira, but that's secondary. What's primary in my mind is that she's asur el baila.
Very self-serving for the Baal.
Umistabra, the Gemara says, keman diomar eino machol. Says the Gemara, it's more logical to assume that after stira, there's no possibility of mechila. Mimai, and I'll show you the logic of it. Why is it so compelling? Gemara says, let's derive this from the response of the Rabbanon to a question posed by Rabbi Yossi. The Sanya, we learned in Ebraisa, Rabbi Yossi Omer Bala Neman Aleha Mikal V'Chomer. The husband is going to be believed. Now, the word believed here is a misnomer. You know, it has nothing to do with trust, with trust, or shall I say, credibility, or any of that sort. The word neman here means that we could allow the Baal, and this was Rabbi Yossi's question, to be alone with the sota on the way up to the Beis Hamikdash. We don't need any escort. We don't need an escort. The whole purpose of the escort is because we're afraid that what might happen on his way up to the Mishkan. He might what, Rabbi Osai? Have a relationship with her? No, he's Neman. Because we're going to derive that he's not allowed to have a relationship with her. And you can trust him. Even if he's alone with her, and there's no one around, no chaperones, you can trust him. And I'll prove it to you, says Rabbi Yossi, from a Kal V'Chomer. Basically, he's undermining the whole Mishnah that we learned, that we're afraid that he will have this intimate relationship, and we have to take precautions against it. Says Rabbi Yossi, we don't need any precautions. He's a good Jew, and we can trust a good Jew. How do I know you can trust a good Jew? To be alone with a woman when he's not allowed to have a relationship with this woman. Uma nida, a man's wife becomes a nida. So I once heard that in some African country, I don't know, when a woman becomes when she menstruates, they kick her out of the house. I heard there's such a thing. I don't know if to this day, I'm saying maybe 1,000 years ago, but she has to live in a separate house. In Halacha, we don't demand that she live in a separate house. They can still sleep in the same bedroom. Now, if he would be overwhelmed by his Yetzirah and he would have a relationship with her, does anybody know what the punishment is for that is?
Koresh.
It's Koresh. That's a pretty severe punishment. And yet, Umani, Toshiba Koresh is such a severe Iser, Baila, Neman, Aleha. We can rely on the Baal to overcome any Yetzirah. And even if he's alone with her, we don't require that from the time that she becomes... Could you imagine, Rabbi Osai, just picture it in your mind, that your wife becomes a nida, you need two chaperones to live with you in the bedroom to make sure that you don't have a relationship with her. Nay, the Torah says we can rely on a person. He knows that he's not allowed to have a relationship with her. And therefore, he could be alone with her, even though the stakes are very high. If heaven forbid, he violates this temptation, he's chay of kares for that. But we rely on a person to overcome his yetzahara, even in that situation. Is sota shehi balav, in the case of a sota, if heaven forbid, the husband would have a relationship with his wife. So the worst case scenario would be he violates a lav. He's not chayv kare. So we'll talk about the lav in just a second. It's just a lotase. I shouldn't say just a lotase. You might get 39 lashes for that. It's no easy street, but it's not kare. It's lo koshkin. How much more so? We should be trusting him. So why does the Mishnah insist that we have to accompany this Baal with his wife with two scholars, you know, who are going to make sure that he's inhibited and he won't let his worst half overcome him, his passions overcome him? Amru lo. So the Chachamim answered, Im Amrit bin Nida. I understand the case of Nida. This is what's called, I don't know if you ever heard of the phrase, Pas Pasalo. Have you ever heard of that? Pas v'salad means when you have the bread in your basket, so to speak. No. What does it mean you have the bread in your basket? Im amrit b'nida sheken yesh la heter. I'll add two words to the Gemara, li'achar zman, in other words, after a certain period of time. So in Yiddish we say, erken oishalten. Oishalten means he can overcome, you know, hold out. Because she will go to the mikveh after she counts Zayin Nikiyum. But Tomar Besota, my gosh, this is a bad situation. You can't tell him, hold out a minute. You overcome your temptation because wait a week or two. No, nothing's going to change in a week or two. She'ain't la heter.
She'll never be permitted.
Right, but in other words, that even strengthens Gemara's point that she may be dead, so you might as well take advantage of this last opportunity, you know, to enjoy the pleasures of life. And by the way, the Gemara elsewhere tells us that a man has a greater yetzahara to have a relationship with a woman once he's already had that relationship. Like, for example, I don't know if you know this law, but after divorce, according to halacha, I don't know if people are somehow... Anyway, but according to the halacha, he's not allowed to live in the same neighborhood as she is. Now, I'm not telling you the details. I mean, you'll check it out in halacha. But there's always a fear that a man who had a relationship with a woman would be tempted to want to have another relationship. But in the case of the nida, just wait a while. So he has in the back of his mind that he'll get an opportunity. But here, this is an irrevocable situation. The iamrit. Now, this answer, the chacham to Rabbi Yossi, will make no sense if you're going to tell me that lachar stira machalva. That means he can actually remove that lav. How? By being mochel his kinui, right? Iyam et liachar stir, even after she violated the kinui, he could still what? He could still be mochel on the kinui. And once he's mochel on the kinui, here I would introduce another concept. I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of lemafrea. Lemafrea means retroactively. So he could retroactively remove the kinui, and it means that there was never a stira, right? Because there was never a kinui. The kinui is completely null and void retroactively. Now, if that be the case, mishkachas la, turns out, the yesh la heter, that he can have a relationship with her. So what are you telling me? The Chacham is saying that he can't overcome. He can't overcome because he's not going to be able to have this intimate relationship. All he has to do is say, "I'm moichel you on the kinui," and he'll be able to reinstitute his intimacy with her. Ibay moichel le kinui ibayl. If he wants to, he can simply. He can simply rescind or negate his kinui, and then he can have be'ilu with him. Elo shmamino, says the Gemara, we see from this, that li'achar stira eino mochel, that he does not have the possibility of being mochel shmamino. Again, whenever you see two shmaminos, you see that this is the final Gemara's conclusion. So again, Rabbi Osei, am I a happy camper, or am I an unhappy camper? I'm happy in the sense that now, the parasha of Sotah is a little bit more meaningful to me. That, in a sense, once she violates the kinui, you know, we're on the way here. You know, she's a Sotah, and the whole Masechta makes sense. But on the other hand, I'm not happy because if you would have told me that he could be mochel even after the stira, that would be, you know, if I was creating a club, an organization of Save a Bad Marriage Club, you know, then that would be my position, that he could be mochel even after the stira. Now the Gemara quotes the Mishnah, with this we'll conclude for the day. Mesu Baleim Achlo Shasu. We have a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai and our Mishnah. What happens if the husband never died before she drinks from the bitter waters? And the machlokas revolves around what's called the ksuba. Do we blame the husband for dying? You know, he was the one who prevented her from being able to prove her innocence, and therefore she deserves her ksuba, and that's Beit Shammai's position. Or do we say, like Beis Hillel, that it wasn't his fault, so she can be blamed because of the stira? And even though she never got a chance or the opportunity to prove her innocence by drinking from the Meimarorim, but nevertheless she lost her ksuba, says Machlokas now, whether or not she collects her ksuba from the Yarshim, from the heirs, he's already gone. But my komiflegi, what is the yisod? What is the fundamental essence or the principle that they're arguing about? Beit Shammai Savri, Beit Shammai of the opinion Shtarho made Ligvos Kigavui Domi. Wow, this is a major, major sugya. So Bli Neder will, even though I was tempted to want to turn the page to get to Chafei Amid Beis, but we'll wait patiently till tomorrow. So wish everyone a great day.
From